Hey, everybody, it's Larry Jacobs on Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio with my usual morning allergies, and it's a pleasure to have you here today. Tuesday after Thanksgiving, the 28th of November, we're going to be talking about E-rates with my good friends down in Oklahoma, Funds for Learning, the top E-rate consultants out there as far as I'm concerned. And if you listen to this show, we're going to talk about being prepared for the E-rate, the new E-rate filing window, being prepared. Okay, your district will get all the money they deserve, and that's why this show is so important. We're going to archive it over at education-talkradio.org and tweet it over at the EduTalk Radio. It's also up on Facebook at EduTalk Radio. You can friend us over there if you like. All right, without further ado, I want to bring on my guest from Funds for Learning, fundsforlearning.com. That's not my guest. My guest is Micah Rigdon. Micah is the Sacagawea. Is that the lady who guided Lewis and Clark across the great Western frontier? Yes, Micah. He wrote me here. His days regularly consist of connecting with school districts and library systems leaders nationwide and navigating them through the entire E-rate process. The Sacagawea of E-rate, the one and only Micah Rigdon of Funds for Learning, who will guide you through the Rocky Mountains and over the rivers and through the deserts to get you to the promised land, i.e. every dollar you deserve from E-rates. Hi, Micah. Welcome back, buddy.
Thank you, Larry.
Right. How's the great state of Oklahoma these days? You got don't you guys have a championship football game coming up?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah,
I think so.
For the Big 12 championship and maybe for the national. So
yeah.
Looking
got
up.
A good team.
Yeah,
and I know you have a lot to do with that, right, Micah?
You know, I throw my weight behind it as much as I can.
Well, you're busy navigating school districts through E-rates, which is keeping you busy enough, believe me. And it's fundsforlearning.com, everybody. They tweeted FFL. Please check it out. They got great information out there. But if you listen to Micah, you're going to get even more information today. So it's really good. Tell John and Heidi and everybody down there I said hello, Micah. Will you do that for me?
I will, yes.
Good man. Okay. You started on you gave me my little cheat sheet here. You wanted to start off. What's the low-hanging fruit for school districts right these days? What is it? Tell me.
Yeah.
Tell us.
A lot of people are looking for, you know, where's the best place that I can start? It's time to think about E-rate again. And you've got 100 things to do. So let's look at the things that are easiest to just knock off the list so you don't have them waiting around for you.
Cool.
The first one and most important that I would say is school districts need to take a look at their sites. Now, this is going to impact your larger school districts with a lot of sites, a lot more. But even
do you mean sites? Do you mean website? Do you mean website or do you mean a physical plant?
Physical plant, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Actual school sites and administrative locations, yeah.
Okay.
These have become more and more scrutinized through the E-rate program over the years. And so the things that they need to be looking for are, first, you know, do we have each and every one of our sites on our list? Is it going to be included on our application? And then looking at the site names, you know, a lot of times the school districts will they'll have a certain name that's on file with like the Department of Education, and then they've got a name that they use to refer to their site just an everyday use. It's going to be helpful to have everything match up with what's on their E-rate records and what they normally call the site, because a lot of times that'll be what they refer to it as in, you know, if they do an RFP or if their service provider gives billing and they list out the sites, they're going to use the common name of that site. And so just something to make sure you've got up to date will cause less confusion down the road.
Good enough. Okay. And that I think that's something that could probably be overlooked, okay, by a lot of school districts.
Absolutely.
And then all you're doing is screwing yourself if you do that. So you got to get everything put together there, right?
That's right, yeah. It's really easy to overlook things, especially as sites change their function. You know, a lot of times you'll have a school site that it's getting older. Obviously, the district's not just going to sell that building. They're going to convert it to another use. Well, it may still be getting internet access, still be connected to the wide area network, even though it may switch from a school to just an office location for the district. So you want to make sure it's still on the list, but that you've got it marked down correctly. You know, if the name changes, obviously it's not a school anymore. You want to update your name. And then a lot of times schools go through renovations, and they'll kind of do a facelift. They'll move the drive-in line from one side of the school to the other side to make more room, and that'll actually change the official mailing address, physical address for the school, even though the school doesn't move. So that's something else to keep an eye out for. You want to be able to update all of your addresses, make sure they're current. You know, zip codes change all the time as cities grow. So you want to make sure that all of your addresses are correct with USAC.
And what happens if you don't?
So if you miss that, either if USAC has the wrong address or your service provider is seeing the wrong address on your bills, when USAC tries to match up your invoices that you're paying with the reimbursements that you should be getting, they'll see an address that's not on your records with them, and they'll pull that out and say, oh, we won't give you the E-rate discount for this site, which can add up, it can add up with what you're missing out on in reimbursements, but it also tends to add up more in man hours trying to fix that problem later on. It takes a lot of time and a lot of emails back and forth between USAC and calls to get that updated after the filing window.
And do you see that a lot? I mean, you work with school districts all over the country. Do you see this as a challenge a lot or moderately or whatever?
Yeah, I'd say this is a pretty high challenge.
Wow.
It happens more frequently
wow.
than you would think. What USAC has been doing recently, they'll take your wide area network invoice. And a lot of times the service provider is going to list a circuit for each site that they're delivering that service to. And each one of those circuits is going to tie back. Either they'll have the name of the school or they'll have the address location that it's being delivered. So USAC will go through that bill line by line and check every single one of those to see if it's on their records. And so we see it, you know, probably I would say at least USAC's reviewing that on every single wide area network, but they're probably catching things that they can't find the site on a good fourth of the ones that they're looking at.
Holy crow! That's unbelievable. Okay, that's simple advice, and that's good advice. I like that one. Okay, you know, I know E-rate's changing. What's going to be more difficult and take more planning this year than before?
Yeah, you know, I think what's going to take more planning this year is just looking through the calendar and looking at what you've got coming up next with the filing window. Every year, you know, USAC, they try to set the dates for when schools are going to be able to file their applications for the E-rate discounts. Those dates have to be approved by the FCC. And so every year it's kind of a waiting game to see, you know, when is the filing window actually going to happen. They're definitely making an effort to start it earlier next year. We're hoping that it's going to be sometime between January, opening in January, and closing in March. That'll give USAC a lot more time to review the applications before the funding year starts in July. And so that's why they're trying to push that up a little bit. But that means that it's right around the corner. And so something that's going to be hard for districts that are just getting started on their process, you know, if you've got to release a formal RFP for a project, if it meets that, you know, dollar threshold for your district, and that's something you're required to do, then, you know, you've got to draft that RFP, put it through the ringer and make sure it meets all the legal requirements, the district requirements. Post it, and it's got to be posted for at least 28 days with their Form 470. So you're already looking, you know, 1 month out from today. If you could do all of that in one day, you're looking at 1 month out. And then most likely, if you're doing an RFP, you're going to have a contract award that goes with it. So that contract has to go, again, has to go through approval. Usually it has to be approved by the board, but just depends on the district. Has to go through a legal team looking at the contract to make sure it meets all of the district's requirements. So you're looking at, you know, when's our next board meeting after we do this RFP, and can we get the contract to the board in time for us to still be able to file? So, you know, it's something that you look at and you're like, oh, well, that's next year. That's after winter break.
Yeah.
But really, it's just around the corner.
Yeah, it is just around the corner. It reminds me of everybody, call me after the holidays. Okay, like nobody's doing anything. We'll just hang
right.
on and wait, you know. Yeah, it's just stupid and procrastinating.
Yeah, everything gets busy again right at the beginning of the school year. So it's a good thing if you can get any of that out of the way, especially just planning, you know, setting a date, like this is the board meeting we're going to take everything to. So, and then working backwards from there and saying, okay, how long do I need for each one of these steps in the process for my district? That'll get you a good idea of when things have to start rolling.
And, you know, I never asked John this question, or you, Micah. John Harrington is the president of Funds for Learning, who's here all the time with me. And not all the time, but when he's on. All right, which is a lot of the year as we go through this. Okay. But, you know, just take a typical – I don't even know how to ask this question. Maybe you can help me with a district in Oklahoma or whatever. And you guys work nationally, of course. But what are E-rates worth to a – typical mid, let's say a rural nice district, okay? How much money will they get from E-rates? Just ballpark, from what to what. So people, I want people to understand how much money is involved in this that is can be delivered to them if they do this right. I never asked that question before.
Yeah, so a lot of that just depends on where the district's located, because a lot of times you can get cheaper services in one place than another. So even some of the smaller districts, if you're looking at a rural district, maybe they've got five sites. But the connection between each one of those sites for their wide area network, it can be several thousand dollars a month, especially depending if they're actually going to get fiber speeds. So even for a small size district that's rural, you know, you're looking at a few hundred thousand dollars a year possibly on what they're paying for their wide area network and their internet connectivity, not to mention if they purchase E-rate eligible equipment. So it's a big chunk of money for them. But then you look at even some mid-sized school districts. Some of these school districts are moving toward a wide area network that they can construct themselves and manage themselves. But that involves a lot of special construction charges to lay a fiber network either underground or on utility poles. So for some of them, you know, this could be a multi-million dollar project, even if you've got a good-sized district in a mid-sized town, you know, with full sites that they have to connect, say 30 sites or so. To build a network like that, it's easily going to cost more than $10 million. But it could be more cost effective.
That's even more than John Harrington makes a month. That's even more than John Harrington makes a month. I can't believe it. Not much, but almost. Almost. Wow.
Right.
I never asked that. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money every year. You know, that the pool that gets spread around, there's $4.5 billion that can be allocated for E-rate. And I think if everyone did everything right along the process, that whole amount would be spread out every year with all of the school districts. Just because these services, they do cost that much, and you can never go backwards. You know, you always have to get more. Every time you increase your bandwidth, it's going to get used up. You're gonna have to have a plan for, okay, we're meeting our needs now, but, you know, 5 years from now, what are our needs going to be? How many people are
I was going to ask you that question. Okay, 5 years from now, all right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're doing E-rates for now, but what do they have to think about when they're doing E-rates now about the future?
Yeah.
How does that work together? And I don't have no idea what the answer to that is.
I think there's two things, two really big things that are actually kind of unrelated. So one is being flexible for the future, and the other one is risk management, because there is some risk involved with applying for E-rate, where you have to comply with all of these rules. So I'll talk about that one first. So, you know, you've got a whole litany of E-rate rules and guidelines that you have to follow, in addition to, you know, whatever your state and local requirements are for keeping track of whatever you're purchasing. So when you're looking at, you know, going through the E-rate process yourself, you know, maybe you've been at the district, you've been doing E-rate for a few years, you feel like you've got a handle on it.
Right.
But there's a lot of turnover in the position of who's in charge of E-rate, you know, who's got the hand on the reins there. So things that may make sense to you now, 5 years from now, you're going to look back at that and say, you know, what was I doing? Or you may pick up something that someone else did, and you're looking at that, and you're like, I don't understand what happened here. Maybe something you were involved in or not, but, you know, I know I can't remember my birthday half the time. So looking back at all of these different data points that you have to keep track of with E-rate, it's important to leave breadcrumbs. So first thing is, you know, if you didn't document it, it really didn't happen. If you can't prove it with some sort of documentation, USACs, they're not going to believe that it happened. You can't, you know, just go back and say, oh, yeah, we did that. We did it right. You got to have some documentation. But then also your documentation has to make sense to you and whoever is going to be looking at this down the road. Because if you're just handing it over to an audit team that's coming in to check, you know, if you've got all these wireless access points, they want to check where the web access points are, if they're still working. You know, they're coming in, you hand them this giant folder, you know, of all your E-rate stuff, and you're like, yeah, I did everything right. There it is. You know, these auditors, they don't do E-rate, they just check E-rate. So your processes, what you went through, all of those steps, you know, maybe you did everything right, but unless they can see it and it's easy for them to see, you've got a lot of risk that they can have an audit finding and end up owing money back to the program. So that's something that you can definitely avoid just by, you know, laying things out. Just like Hansel and Gretel, you got to find your way back through the forest.
That's a great analogy, by the way. And, you know, how long – with income tax, the federal income tax, it's 7 years. You have to keep your records. I'm not sure of that, but at least that's what I do. Okay, and the rest of the IRS are in the flames of the fire every year. Okay, as the 7 years passes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, but what is it for E-rate? How far back do they expect you to go?
Yeah, for E-rate, it's 10 years from the last year of service. So you start things right now. The things that everyone's working on right now for the next filing window, you're looking at 10 years from June 30th of 2019 at the very least. So it's an incredibly long amount of time.
It is.
Longer than the IRS, but they expect you to keep it for at least that time frame. And then sometimes you'll get contracts that, you know, they last 5 years. So you've got to keep documentation of, you know, how was that contract procured. 5 years before this, and then another 10 years on that. So,
I got to ask you this: when you go into a new school district you're working with, and you work with hundreds of school districts, probably thousands across the country, and Funds for Learning does, how many of them have their records well kept? When you go into a new one, I mean, obviously, if you're working with them, you keep them records for them, but or they have, you know, you demand they have them, okay? But
kind of the first step of the process that we do is we kind of do a test and try to get as much documentation as we can. You know, obviously, you want to look what you've got right now, you know, the things that you're using right now that are getting E-rate discounts. You know, do you have all of the documentation for that? So first thing we do is test it out and see, you know, if it's really easy for whoever we're working with, when we ask, you know, can you give us this, and then we get it, you know, within that day, then we know that it's pretty accessible, and they've got something in place where they know where their records are. More often, it's going to be the case where you ask for something that's old, and it's going to take a week or so to figure out where that was stored. And usually the school districts have everything, but it's just a matter of finding it, and can you find it when you need it? Because the reviews for you,
I have everything. I have everything here. I can't find it when I need it. That's exactly the problem.
Yeah. So it's really hard to keep track of. It's a lot easier, honestly, if you move your records to something that's electronic, then you can typically search through it a little bit more. That's why everything that we do, we name it a certain way, we save it in a certain place so that we know where it is. We don't have
very
to dig around.
Yeah. And it's good. All this organization saves money and gets you more, gang. The Trump administration, and I know FCC, FCC is under the executive branch, right?
They're appointees that come from the president. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now President Trump, is changing a lot of things in Washington. I think everybody agrees with that. All right. Is there any changes coming from this administration onto E-rates?
So, looking back at, there were pretty significant changes in the E-rate program a few years ago, starting in 2014. And that came under the previous administration, but the current FCC chairman, Pai, he was a commissioner at that time. And so you can kind of look at, what were his reactions to the changes that they made. And, generally, he said time and again, and I think it's true, that he really values the E-rate program and that he wants to see it successful.
I'm sure he does, yeah.
I think if any of the changes that they're going to make are just going to be to strengthen the E-rate program, try to get some of the administrative hurdles out of the way. It's very difficult to do this, what they tried to do last time. I'm not sure that they were successful in that. But I don't see any significant changes from what the FCC, the current FCC administration that's been there for a while. There's nothing that indicates that they don't want to continue E-rate. If anything, they want to make sure that there's plenty of oversight in the program. So I would say
good for them. That's good.
From my take, the biggest change would be that maybe they might do more reviews, make more stringent rules and more audits in place for what they've got currently.
It's interesting. And you know what? I whenever I think of E-rate, I think of school networking. Like, Cosin and you guys are the consortium of school networking. You and Funds for Learning and Cosin are very close, all that sort of thing. I think of school networking. But I just want to ask, beyond school networking, if such an answer exists, what's the biggest impact that people will get from all this? Is it just simply dollars, or is it just dollars for networking, or how's it work? The biggest impact from E-rate for all this effort that everybody's putting in?
I think, if you're a school district and you've got a budget that you've got little money left over, that's going to be pretty rare.
Yeah, it is. So I was just going to say.
Most every
that must be the basis of your science fiction novel. Yeah, money left over for school district. Yeah.
Yeah, so every school district's looking for another funding source. So, on a very surface level, E-rate is a technology funding source. But these are services that you're going to have regardless. These aren't like the cutting edge technologies that one or two school districts can afford. This is everybody has to have their wide area network in place, and everybody has to have internet access. So, you're really looking at utilities that are simply required. You're going to be paying for them regardless. So I think the biggest impact for school districts is just to make sure, are we getting our fair share of the discount?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of
what
have an impact
say.
On your overall budget. So the money that you're getting back for the discounts, you're not required to spend that on technology or any specific thing. You know, that can go right back into, you know, if we're saving this much money, can we afford more resources? We got to replace our HVAC system. You know, things that break, or you know, if you can get a reliable funding source from E-Rate, it's going to free up even as you're looking at your budget. You know, can we afford to pay teachers more? If you're not getting your E-Rate discounts, some of that money is definitely going to be going to your internet access and your wide area network. But if you're doing your due diligence and you're getting E-Rate funds flowing in, it's going to free up a good chunk of your budget overall.
Do you know of any school districts who weren't applying for E-Rates? I mean, does every school district in the country do this?
You know, I think that there are some single school sites, private schools, and just really rural single locations that are public schools that are not applying, just because, they don't have to pay for a network to connect to other schools. Yeah, so there's less of an impact for them. But I would say when we've polled school districts nationwide, it's well over 95% of all school districts are applying.
It's got to be.
It's
got to be. And even in networking, you want your kids to have great access to the internet. Even if you're one school, you want your kids to have access. You know,
And you'd even look at some states, they form groups, consortium to provide network access for the state. So it may not be the school district that's receiving the funding, but it's going through the state so that the state can provide that connectivity. So practically every student in America is impacted by E-Rate, either positively because they're getting their discounts or not so positively because they're not getting enough.
Yeah, there's no negative. That's a good way to put it. There's no negative, but you got to. We're going for the only positive here. So be smart, school districts. Funsforlearning.com. If you quick get in touch with them, you'll actually talk to Mike alive. He is not a robot. I repeat, he is not a robot. All right, and it's complicated stuff, Mike. Thanks a million, man. This was good. I love doing shows with you guys. Of course, any school district, and I say this every time. Okay, you know, Funds for Learning are E-Rate consultants. They're like accountants for your income tax. And my standing joke is I didn't use an accountant for my income tax, and that's why my wife is spending 30 years in jail, and we didn't get our money back. Okay, so please, don't be fools, as school districts. Make sure you're talking to people who know what they're doing, like Funds for Learning, who can get every dollar you deserve and save you thousands of man hours in time. Okay, and all that sort of thing. Thanks a million, Micah.
All right, thank you, Larry.
Have a good day, my friend. If I don't talk to you or anybody down there before, I hate to say this already, Merry Christmas. Get your Christmas shopping done.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Thanks, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Micah Rigdon, Funds for Learning, funsforlearning.com. They tweeted FFL. We'll archive the show at education-talkradio.org and tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Can't thank you enough for listening. We got two more shows tonight.